this is a challenge and an opportunity for the men who are listening to this podcast to embrace and take on, is that there's a lot of walking wounded out there in your circles. Too many times, men don't just leave their local church, they walk away from their faith. It's such a terrible ordeal they go through, and they get so little support from the people that they thought were their biggest supporters in their local church, that they leave that church and they never find another church that they can call home. So there's lots of men out there who we as men can reach out to and can help, who have been through this. Their lives have been broken, their faith walk has been broken, and they're still not back on track.
Welcome to the Throwing Mountains podcast, where men are rediscovering courageous leadership and drawing strength from stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. Men who've become leaders in their spheres of influence by relying on God and following Jesus. I'm Chris Bollinger. Mike Hatch and I enjoy hearing the stories of the guests that we interview, and we try to find guests whose stories cover a broad range of topics. One topic that we haven't covered much, however, is divorce. There's a lot of stigma around that topic in Christian churches, especially evangelical churches. That stigma isn't helping the millions of Christian men who have been through a divorce. In fact, an estimated 30% of Christian men who go through a divorce not only leave their current church, but walk away from their faith altogether. In the fall of 2021, we had two episodes where we discussed the impact of divorce on Christian men and how you can help a Christian brother when he goes through a divorce. Here are highlights from those two episodes.
So yeah, why don't you start us out with some of these, some of the information that you've gleaned over the years?
Okay. Yeah, I thrive on information. I thrive on data. And so when I went through my divorce, I wanted to find out as much as I could about it. It just helps me. It helped me cope.
Yeah.
And so I started with how many people like me, how many men like me have been through divorce. So my source for the first one is Institute for Family Studies. And the reason I went with them was I was looking at a lot of different sources and they seemed to be very consistent and very thorough in the information they presented. So the first one is, okay, how many U.S. adults have been through at least one divorce? And, you know, typically we hear it's about half of people. And that's a little bit higher than what it really is. It's about 45% of U.S. adults have been through at least one divorce.
So that's a pretty broad category. Out of all U.S. adults, it's about 45%, which is
who have been married. So
we've been married.
Just to clarify.
Thank you.
So U.S. adults who have been married, what percentage of them have been through one divorce? So,
yeah. And that in itself was a little bit of a surprise to me. I expected it to be over 50%.
Right. So among the people who've been divorced, they looked at religious affiliation. And probably not surprisingly, those who had no religious affiliation were higher than average. So it was 48%, not a lot higher, but a little bit higher than average than the overall number. They differentiate between so-called mainline Protestants and evangelical Protestants. And those were both exactly the same, and they were both 45%. So the average, so no difference between people who are at least claiming to be mainline Protestants or evangelical Protestants.
Yeah.
So that's a little disconcerting that people who are Christians are going through this at the same rate as people who are not.
Yeah.
Catholics were actually lower. They were 37%. Still
interesting.
Higher than I think anybody in the Catholic Church would like, but lower than Protestants. And so then the next thing that you typically hear is that, well, people who go to church, you know, that's people who claim to be Christians. Maybe they don't actually practice their faith. Maybe they're, you know, very irregular attenders, but people who go to church are going to be a lot lower. That's what I typically hear.
Yep.
And that actually is true according to the Institute for Family Studies. So regular churchgoers are lower But I think I may have asked you this before, but what do you think the percentage is for regular churchgoers, given that it's lower?
I would think it'd be maybe around 35 or 40%, I think is have guessed.
It's 37%. So it's lower, but it's not a lot lower. It's the same as Catholics.
Interesting.
Catholics are, a lot of Catholics are regular churchgoers. So that kind of follows.
And Catholics, I know the Catholic faith, they see marriage as a sacrament. And so where the Protestant faith, typically we don't. And so they have maybe a more dogmatic idea or approach to marriage in some sense. And there's, I think, maybe more of a stigma associated with divorce, even more so than the Protestant church, that probably keeps that number low, would be my guess.
Right. I would guess the same. Yeah. Okay. So wanting to delve in more into the churchgoers, given that I have always been a regular churchgoer, I go pretty much every week, sometimes more than once. And so what are people like me experiencing when it comes to divorce? So I dug into that, and my source for this was Lifeway Research. So what they did was they looked at regular churchgoers, and this is people who go at least once a month, which may not be as regular as, we would think, but that's, at least once a month they're going to church.
Yeah.
And they looked at several groups. One of them was people who had healthy marriages. So these are couples who go to church at least once a month, and they have a pretty healthy marriage.
Yeah.
And then they looked at couples who were regular churchgoers who ended up being separated or divorced.
Okay.
And they looked at the behavior of that second group was 3 months before the separation or divorce. So this is not like, did you used to go to church regularly? These were people who were going to church at least once a month.
Yeah.
And then, 3 months later, they ended up getting separated or divorced. Okay. Among healthy marriages, so among couples who had healthy marriages, 87% of them were going at least once a week.
Okay. Yep. That makes sense.
So among those who ended up getting divorced 3 months later or separated, what percentage of them do you think would have been going to church every week?
Yeah, I would very much assume a lower percentage. Maybe it's more like 30%.
Okay. It was lower. I would say significantly lower based on my experience with statistics, but it was still 70%.
Oh, wow.
So 70% of couples who got separated or divorced were attending as a couple every week.
Wow.
So that was shocking to me.
Yeah, that is surprising.
But it gets more interesting. Not in a good way. They looked at several other metrics involved in a small group.
Mm-hmm.
And 41% of couples with healthy marriages were involved in a small group. Serving in community ministry, 31% of couples with healthy marriages are serving in a community ministry, and 45% of couples with a healthy marriage held positions of responsibility in the church. That could be a staff position, it could be a significant volunteer position, maybe serving on the church elder board or council. And you and I already went over these numbers, so I won't belabor the point, but there was almost no difference between these numbers and those who got divorced. In fact, in some cases, the people who got separated or divorced actually were higher. So 41% of healthy married couples were in a small group. It was 46% of those. So it was actually higher. Not statistically significantly higher, but it was higher.
Yeah.
Serving in a community ministry, it was higher. 34%. Versus 31%. Held positions of responsibility in the church, it was a little bit lower on the troubled marriage side, 39% of troubled marriages versus 45% of healthy.
Wow.
But really, statistically, almost no difference. And so surprisingly high in terms of attending church once a week. So basically, when you and I talked about this before, we concluded that you have no idea. Yeah, when you're looking at the congregation, when you're looking at involvement, when you're looking at, because what metrics do we use? Going to church every week?
That's it.
70% of people who ended up getting separated or divorced going to church every week. Involved in a small group, higher than average. Wow. Involved in community ministry, higher than the healthy couples. And, you know, in a position of leadership of the church, pretty much the same. So I found these numbers to be shocking and disconcerting.
Yeah.
And you being in ministry, I mean, it's got to be just an absolute eye opener.
It is. Because I would typically, I would, as a pastor, I would assume without a doubt that someone's attending regularly, involved in a group or serve, even serving together, that they are way less likely to be, you know, a victim of divorce like that. That absolutely is surprising. And it is disconcerting. As pastors, it should cause us to flip our radar up in a sense, because it's really hard to tell just based on the metrics we normally use in churches for people's spiritual well-being, which is what I just like in our church, we used to say, are they attending regularly? Are they involved in a small group? Are they serving and or giving financially? Those are kind of the three or four criteria we would use. And most churches do. Well, guess what? According to this, what we just learned is that will not be a clear determining factor of people with their risk for divorce.
You simply can't tell. And I will say, you know, again, I'm trying to leave my own personal experience out of this, but my ex-wife and I attended church every week together. We're serving in the church, serving in ministries related to the church in a small group. We ticked all the boxes. I don't think we said this up front. Divorce is a very bad thing. We're not encouraging people to get divorced. We're hoping and praying that people in troubled marriages will find resolution and continue as married couples. It's what God wants.
Yep.
In the vast majority of cases. But I think we need to be realistic and talk about what happens to men when they get divorced.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the quote typical couple who's going to church. They're Christians. They're going to church every week. They're in a small group. They're in a troubled marriage. And then the marriage ends.
Mm-hmm.
In what percentage of these situations does the wife initiate the separation and the divorce? It's about 70% of the time. So I would think that the average person who hasn't taken sides when the woman initiates the divorce would tend to think that she has cause, she has reason.
Sure.
And so I think a lot of us would say, well, maybe he was unfaithful. Maybe he, you know, we would tend to look at the man and say, well, if she filed, then at least part of the blame must rest on his shoulders. I think it's just human nature to assume that.
Sure.
And I think a lot of times in the church, we say, well, you know, the only biblical grounds for divorce, and I could get into this in a whole nother podcast, but we tend to say God hates divorce, but if there's a cause, then adultery would certainly be one that the church would accept if the divorce is going to go through. And you and I talked about this before. There are many cases where marriages survive adultery.
Oh yeah.
I don't have great statistics on this, but it's very, very high.
Yep.
I guess my point is that the guy is now in a position of being on defense in many situations. The wife has initiated the divorce and people are looking to him as, well, what did you do?
And he's surprised himself many times.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Right. But I went digging into, okay, well, why do women initiate most divorces, given that marriages survive infidelity? And obviously, if there's unrepentant infidelity or unrepentant abuse, or, you know, if there are some situations where the guy is at fault and he won't repent.
Yeah.
Even in a Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found mostly in secular publications, such as Psychology Today, is that women who initiate divorce tend to be dissatisfied with the marriage more than the man is.
Mm.
The man oftentimes, and again, we're generalizing, but oftentimes the man is concerned more with the fact that his wife is dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
He understands there are issues in the marriage, but he, in general, is content to stay in the marriage and the wife is not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, again, that's generalizing over many, many situations.
Right.
But I think it is fair to say that the husband often is surprised.
Yeah.
When the wife initiates, he thought they were working on it. He thought that, there was hope in the marriage surviving, and she has concluded that there is not.
Yeah.
And so he is now in a position of being surprised that this is done. I think we can't minimize the impact on men in just about all divorces, especially when he is caught off guard. There is no reconciliation, and this is going to happen, or this has happened. And I liken it to a bomb exploding in the man's life. And again, not trying to minimize the impact on women. Obviously, right. They're going to go through something very, very similar.
Right.
But in terms of men, when your marriage ends, it is like a death.
Yep.
It's been likened to a death without a funeral.
Yep.
Now you're dealing with your hopes, dreams, and plans being done, because you're in a marriage. Everything that you have planned for has been the marriage and the family, if you have kids. A large part of your identity, both in the church as well as outside the church, is now done.
Yeah.
You know, let's consider at church. You were always a couple and a family at church. Mm-hmm. And now you're not. Now you're an individual, and you're part of a broken family.
Right.
Your children, your role as a father, and other roles in your extended family are now completely different. With the kids, you were always a team, and now you're many times combatants, your opponents in this. And so you have to navigate that. Your relationships in the church, your relationships outside the church with family members, friends, coworkers, and others are now all different.
Yep.
You were in a small group until last week.
Yep.
Now you're not going back to the small group because it was a couple small group.
Yep. And now you have to figure out how to explain, because every other couple in the small group is going to take their side.
Yep.
And it ruins all that relational security you may have felt beforehand.
Right. Your finances just took a big hit, not just because of the settlement. It's not going to be the same. Your financial picture will not be the same. Your health, and I think we minimize this a lot, not just your emotional health, but your spiritual health and your physical health will take a beating for some period of time. And it could be years.
Yeah.
Where you're just not the same.
No. Oh, and I've seen that. Oh my gosh, have I seen that in men over and over again? I mean, it is like part of them. Obviously, you said it's like a death without a funeral, but part of that man dies.
Yeah.
And they are very different, at least for a time, because like you said, they found their identity in the marriage and the family. Now it's like, who am I now? You question everything.
Yep. And related to that, as part of your health, is your self-esteem, your confidence, your emotional well-being, your ability to focus at work, elsewhere. I mean, you're a failure. I mean, let's face it. Whether or not you were at fault, your marriage has failed, you are a failure. You will bear that stigma for the rest of your life. Even when you get remarried, if you get remarried, for the rest of your life, you are a divorced man whose marriage failed. And for most men, they will feel like a failure for the rest of their lives. What could I have done differently? Mm-hmm. What did I do wrong?
The Throwing Mountains podcast is part of the BiblicalLeadership.com podcast network. The vision of BiblicalLeadership.com is to lift up Christ, spread his word, and edify, encourage, and spark boldness in his servants around the world. The Bible is, of course, a guide to eternal life, but it's also a real-world guide to living, providing guidance on a broad range of topics, including marriage, parenting, faith, work, and leadership. The folks at BiblicalLeadership.com provide rich content and resources that help leaders use the Bible as a practical leadership manual every day. Be sure to check out BiblicalLeadership.com today.
You know, it's interesting too, as you share that, a couple of things stick out to me. That number one, men typically aren't aware of how unsatisfied their wife might be, even when maybe she at times will try to communicate to him about it.
Even when they've gone to counseling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of men will work the problem, like they said in Apollo 13, let's work the problem. And the problem is a relationship. And it's difficult to work the problem with a relationship. It's, you know, there's not one thing you can fix and then the marriage is back on track. So I think, yeah, guys may have been to counseling. It may have been years that this has been a problem and they struggle with it. Churches struggle here too. Churches are all about marriage and the family, but 31% of people said that they did not feel comfortable going to anybody in the church to state that they're having marital issues. And I know churches are open, you know, encouraging people to, you know, come to the pastors, find somebody in the church, find somebody on staff who can help you. They have counseling referral services. Churches are are doing the best they can, but
two observations that I wrote down as we kind of transition in a sense to the challenge that churches face with this is number one, clearly what's happening in the church with regard to attending, serving, being involved in groups is not doing what we think as pastors to prevent divorce. Right. That's number one. But then number two is that couples may not be honest in assessing their marriage.
Because
like you said, they're continuing to do what they always do. They're trying to do what they're being told to do actually from the church, keep attending, get into a group. But for whatever reason, it's not scratching the itch in a sense. It's not really solving the problem. And by the way, so at this point too, I do just want to interject this recommendation because I've been through this, program myself. Our church has done it and it has had a big impact. Is there's a program called Reengage. It's a marriage course that people go through, and I know my wife and I have been through it a couple times, and it's very good. I equate it to almost like Celebrate Recovery for marriages, in a sense. And the way the questions are worded, the way you actually, because here part of, you know, from my pastoral perspective, part of the problem is that you don't always necessarily address directly the issues with regard to your marriage in your small groups.
Right.
Unless it is a small group that intentionally addresses those issues. And Reengage does that in a really, really fantastic way to get you to start talking about some of that stuff that you wouldn't otherwise be talking about in kind of a generic small group.
Yeah, marriage enrichment is a great thing. And I think that there are tactical things that churches can do to get people into marriage enrichment, such as, and I've seen this practice at churches I've attended, couples with healthy marriages go anyway. You know, they encourage everybody to go. It's not, let's fix your broken marriage in this session thing. It's more of a, let's make your marriage better. Whether it's great or whether it's troubled, let's give you some tools and some practices to make your marriage stronger, because every marriage can be made stronger.
We had a couple that we met with, my wife and I, probably years 7 through 10-ish maybe, where, oh my gosh, there was an older couple in their late 60s, early 70s who mentored us and would meet with us. And it was just kind of a marriage mentoring thing. No real issues, you know, specifically to address. But as you meet together, as you get to know them and you trust them and you start sharing more vulnerably, man, we shared some of our darkest moments with them, because it came along and were committed to us relationally. And that made a huge, huge impact on our marriage to have that mentoring couple build into us and encourage us in our marriage.
Yeah. But I don't want to minimize the fact that, you know, men who have been through a divorce in a church setting are profoundly impacted by it. And unfortunately, many of them do not get the support that they need in their church, and it has lasting repercussions. A large percentage of couples who go through a divorce do not both stay in that church, and that's not surprising. One or both of the people in that marriage that has ended are going to leave that particular church. My research indicates that it's usually the man. Not always, but usually the man who leaves that church. And unfortunately, at least 20% of the divorced men don't go back to church. They never go back. I think it's actually a little higher than that. I think it's closer to 30%. this is a challenge and an opportunity for the men who are listening to this podcast to embrace and take on, is that there's a lot of walking wounded out there in your circles. Too many times men don't just leave their local church. They walk away from their faith. It's such a terrible ordeal they go through, and they get so little support from the people that they thought were their biggest supporters in their local church.
Yeah.
That they leave that church and then they never find another church that they can call home. So there's lots of men out there who we as men can reach out to and can help, who have been through this. And it doesn't have to be, you know, they just went through the divorce 3 months ago. It could be years. Their lives have been broken. Their faith walk has been broken, and they're still not back on track.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on anything except what's happened to me, and that doesn't make me an expert on much of anything. So I think it's really important up front to say that these tips that we're going to provide were done with consultation with a Christian counselor.
That's great.
So I think it'll be beneficial to have that expert perspective to go along with whatever biases that I might bring to the table from my own personal experience. Although my experience has been instructive in a lot of ways, because I realized that before I went through a divorce, I didn't hang out with divorced people. I really had very little to do with them. And I think that's true for a lot of us, especially in the church world. We tend to hang with people who are very similar to us in a similar stage of life. You know, I started off in the singles small group before I got married. And then I was in the married with no kids small group. And then I was in the married with little kids small group, where we had babysitters brought in so we could, you know, throw the kids at them and do the small group as adults and have a little bit of break from our little kids. And then we were in the teenagers small group. So that experience is not unique to me. That's the way things tend to go in the church. As a result, divorced people tend to be kind of on the fringes of a lot of church life, just like singles are. Now, I had the good fortune of being in a real good singles small group or singles ministry before I got married, but a lot of singles, the church really has very little for them. Divorced people tend to not have a lot of programs tailored to their situation and their needs in the typical church.
Yeah. And that's convicting to me, even as a pastor, because I know that's been my experience as well. As I think back of, you know, am I hanging out with people who are divorced or men who are divorced? Now, as a pastor, it's kind of my role to meet with guys that way. So yeah, in that sense, I would often meet with folks who are going through divorce individually or have been through one. But as a couple, my wife and I, and in our daily kind of or rhythm, if you will, of community, they typically weren't part of it. That's not a good thing necessarily, you know?
Or you may feel that, how can I really interact with this guy? How can I really help him? Because I don't have any personal experience. If you don't, and a lot of people don't, you know, I don't have any real experience with what it's like to be divorced. So what can I offer this guy? And the reality is, you can offer him a lot. So let's talk about what we can do to help those men in our walk of life who have been through a divorce. One thing we didn't really stress a lot on the last episode, but is a reality for a lot of guys, is he doesn't have a support structure at church. You know, he's been at church, maybe he's been at that church for a long time, but most guys can count on one hand and maybe on less than one finger how many close male friends they have at their church. They just don't. You know, they may have a couple of close friends in their life, but odds are they're not at that church. That's one of the reasons why a lot of guys leave their church when they get divorced. It's unlikely that both the husband and wife are going to stay. The wife tends to have a much better support structure at that church. If you encounter or know a guy who's been through a divorce, you may be one of the few men, Christian men in his life, who's even paying any attention to him right now. A lot of guys are not going to call somebody. They feel ashamed. They feel like a failure. And so the first thing that you can do to help out your divorced male friend is to reach out to him. Even if it's been some time since the divorce happened, he may still be pretty much on his own. Yeah. And he may not have a lot of guys in his life who are coming alongside him and helping him out.
It's so simple, but at the same time, you know, they talk about sometimes how the phone can feel really heavy.
Yeah.
That might be one of those times for some of us where, oh boy, how's he going to respond to me? What's he going to be like? Like we talked about in the previous episode, a lot of these guys who've gone through divorce, they're a little different.
Yeah.
Because of the pain and the explosion that just happened in their lives. They're not the same old friends that we, in some ways, that we used to know. But at the same time, that shouldn't stop us, because that person's still there.
Right.
Who they were before is still there. It's just they've experienced a tremendous amount of trauma.
Right.
And need someone to show genuine care.
Right. So if he was a part of your couple small group, or if you knew him from a men's Bible study, or you just saw him on Sunday mornings, or maybe he didn't go to your church, but you knew him in some other way, mm-hmm. start by reaching out to him. If that phone's super heavy, maybe you text him instead of calling him. Thinking about you, praying for you, just make contact with him. If he doesn't respond the first time, try again. If he didn't know you that well to start off with, then he may be not put off, but he may be not terribly responsive the first time you reach out. So try again and let him know that you are available to meet with him. It's not just a, hey, I'm praying for you kind of thing, you know, the old, you know, lobbing it over the fence kind of a thing. Let him know you're serious. Hey, love to get together with you. You know, maybe we could have coffee sometime. Maybe we could go out golfing. Just offer him some opportunity to get together face to face.
Yep.
Keep at it, recognizing that he may take some time to agree. Your goal is to get him to agree to meet with you. Mm-hmm. Because texting and even talking on the phone just isn't the same. You really would love to have a sit down face to face conversation with him, some opportunity to interact with him. And it's a one-on-one thing, and make it clear to him that this is going to be a confidential setting. So you're not going to have a couple other guys show up or, you know, be in a place where he doesn't feel comfortable talking. Step two is you're going to make yourself available, because recognize that even if he agrees, he may bail, you know, he may just not show up. There's stuff going on in his life that may make him a little unreliable. So you contact him, you extend the invitation, and then you stick with them until you actually get a chance to meet with them face to face.
That's huge. Cause again, I think we, in our culture, I think so it's easy for us to get maybe offended too quickly if someone doesn't respond right away. And especially again, in something like this, just to know that again, this person has experienced trauma and they're not operating on the same level emotionally, mentally that they were before. I think often as time goes on, you'll see them move closer to you if you continue to make yourself available.
Right. Yeah. It could take weeks. It potentially could even take a couple of months before he agrees to meet with you. But if you're steady, like you said, if you stick with it, then you're likely to get him to respond eventually.
I think that guy probably wants to know if you're really legitimate or authentic in that as well. Right. A lot of men who've been through divorce or going through it have this, suspicious kind of mentality, because they're not sure. Has my wife talked to you? Have you heard from so-and-so? I know the pastor isn't on my side. He's already sided with her. So where are you in all this? Are you just reaching out because, like, what are the motives behind it? You know what I mean? That can play into it.
I was fortunate enough to be in a CLC group before I got divorced. So I knew those guys really, really well. But outside of that, the guys that I knew at church, a lot of times were the husbands in my couple small group. Mm-hmm. I didn't know them very well, right? I mean, you know, small group meeting, we would have a little small talk before the study and then a little small talk after the prayer time and went on our ways. And I didn't know these guys very well. Other guys I would see on Sunday mornings, and it was just kind of were they close friends? No, they were just, you know, guys at church. I probably don't know you very well, and you're contacting me out of the blue. Frankly, you never contacted me before the divorce, right?
Yeah.
And we didn't hang out. Now, if you do have a closer friend, then it should be a little easier. But if it's a relative stranger that you kind of know, then yeah, it's going to take time for him to lower some of the walls that he may have built up and accept that you legitimately just want to spend some time with him. And frankly, it's not something a lot of guys do in church. I mean, when's the last right. time you contacted somebody out of the blue and said, "Hey, let's get together"? We just don't do that. Okay, so when you get him to meet with you, you need to resist the urge to be a problem solver. And a lot of us guys are problem solvers. We want to find an opportunity to say, "Hey, well, have you tried this? Or what about this?" And especially on the first meeting, but even a couple of meetings with him, don't solve his problems. Don't interject a lot. Be a good active listener. If you've been to counseling, you probably have learned the active listening techniques. Be there for him as somebody who cares about him and wants him to feel comfortable telling you anything.
A key partner for the Throwing Mountains podcast is the men's ministry CLC, Christ-Led Communities. CLC strives to build authentic community through the uncommon pursuit of Christ, and it has had an incredible impact on the lives of tens of thousands of men, including Mike Hatch and me. If you're like most men, then you have many male acquaintances, but few or even no trusted male friends. With CLC, you'll join with other men around the person and work of Jesus Christ, and powerful things will happen. You'll see masks removed and honest brotherhood begin. CLC is much more than a Bible study. It's a relational pathway that equips men for a lifetime of biblically based leadership. For more information, go to clchq.org or email Mike Hatch at mhatch@clchq.org.
So that was number three, right?
Right.
Number resist three. The urge to be a problem solver.
Right. Yeah, let him take the wheel is what I think I put in the article. So you reach out, you make yourself available, you encourage him to meet with you. And then when you do have that first meeting, you let him take the wheel. This is great. This is his meeting. So if he wants to vent, let him vent. Mm-hmm. If he wants to sit there in silence for a while, then sip your coffee. You know, don't push him. Don't make yourself the center of the conversation. This is his time. Don't start waxing eloquent on how you golfed the other day. You know, don't fill the dead time with stuff about you. Just give him opportunities to say whatever he wants to say. And, you know, if he doesn't know you that well, he will appreciate your letting him talk. He may want to get to know you a little bit better, but let him steer that too. You know, if he asks you questions, then by all means answer his questions. And his first question may be, "Why are you here?" You know, so
I've heard it said before that listening is one of the best ways to love someone else.
Yep.
Just listening. And maybe it's a matter of listening and then just kind of repeating back. So what you're saying is this,
right.
Oh, I'm sorry. That must feel terrible. Active listening, responding, maybe mirroring a little bit of what he's saying. Just the opportunity and the freedom. And when you're in his shoes, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, Chris, you spend a lot of time alone.
Yes,
and so you're in your head a lot and you don't necessarily get these thoughts out. And so just having someone to, as a sounding board, to get your thoughts out and hear yourself say these things can actually clarify some things for yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's very beneficial. You're right. You are with other people because you're working and you're going through your life, but you feel alone even when you're with other people.
Definitely. And the other thing you mentioned that not to be, you know, the problem solver, but not to correct him. Again, I'm going with the image of someone who's been traumatized. You know, I think of a war or a battle scene in a movie where you've got someone whose leg is blown off or something. They are not the calmest, most considerate people in those moments.
Right.
Like I was thinking to myself, I played high school football and I, at one point, hyperextended my knee and injured it. And it was so painful. And I remember cussing. Like I've never cussed before as a result of that. But guess what? Nobody on the team came up to me and were like, "Hey, Mike, you really should watch your mouth."
Yeah.
Come on now. again, like you said, let him vent. If yeah. there's language involved, or if it doesn't seem like he's acting correctly, reserve that temptation to correct him, basically. Yeah. Don't do
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. If I had witnessed you hyperextending your leg, I probably would not, would not have anything to yeah. say to you except, oh my gosh. Yeah. That's
not
a,
fun.
That's a painful one.
Yeah.
Number three was let him take the wheel. Number four is something that I would probably not have thought of myself, but the counselor that I consulted with gave me this one. It is grieve with him. Like you said, I mean, this is somebody who's been through a traumatic experience. I can't think of a great analogy, but if someone close to you died and you felt like you could have done something to prevent it, that's Ooh. Probably a pretty close analogy to what a typical divorce guy is going through, because his marriage has died. He feels like he could have done something or could have done more to prevent that death.
Yeah.
And so he's kicking himself and he is grieving. He's grieving the death of his marriage. He's grieving the cascade of deaths that have precipitated from that.
Yeah.
And you are there to, and like you said, I mean, he's been alone. He may not have really grieved this. And there's the stages of grief. You don't always go through them in a particular order. And, you know, you can spend a long time in one of the stages.
Mm-hmm.
So he may still be angry. He still, you know, he may be in denial about some things.
Right.
Help him grieve this death that he may not have been able to fully process and work through at this point. It depends on how long it's been, but the grief can go on for years with a typical divorce. He's probably still going through part of that, and you can help him with that.
This is Romans 12, starting in 12:12. Okay. Rejoice in hope, be patient in affliction. I think you could actually define this as affliction in some ways too. So we're being patient in the affliction of our friend that they're facing. Be persistent in prayer. Share with the saints in their needs. Pursue hospitality. It's funny because you're talking about all these things already.
Right.
Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. To me, like as you're talking about grieving with him, what it means is you're empathetically kind of entering into that experience with him so he's not alone in it and helping him to grieve and maybe even weeping with him.
He may not feel comfortable grieving or sharing some things in certain settings. So, I mean, you may be in a Starbucks, for example, and, you know, nobody's going to overhear, but he just doesn't, you know, he sees people around and he may not be really willing to open up there. But if you went on a hike, went for a walk somewhere, went on a hike where you're out in the woods and he's moving around, some people just process better and communicate better when they're on the move. I know I'm that way. I'd rather be on a walk than sitting in a booth if I'm going to share. Next one I have on the list is to be trustworthy and steady. We touched on this a little earlier in terms of having a setting that's quiet and confidential enough that he doesn't feel like somebody's going to overhear. But the risk here in be trustworthy and steady is you. So nobody's going to overhear this, but you got to keep your mouth shut. He's going to share things with you that he does not want repeated.
That's right.
Personal stuff, things he did wrong. And if you share this with anybody, your wife, somebody else at church, then it's game over. You've violated his trust and he's not coming back to you. Plus you've hurt him in a way because, you know, he opened up to you and you made him pay for it.
And may end up impacting who he trusts in the future too,
exactly,
because then now he's going to be more hesitant. Yeah.
Be steady with him, be encouraging, but make it clear that you are not going to repeat these things. Now, obviously if he says that he's been thinking about killing himself or, you know, there are some things you have to share for his own good, but with those few exceptions, you need to keep this stuff to yourself.
That's great.
And that will build trust that will be sustainable over time with him.
Yeah. Real quick, before we move on, just to recap again. So number one, you said reach out.
Right.
Number two, we're making ourselves available. Number three, let him take the wheel in the discussion and the time together. Number four, grieve with him.
Yep.
And number five, be trustworthy and steady.
Okay. Number six is to be encouraging. That's an interesting word to me, encouraging, because it has courage in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is not filling him with a bunch of patronizing platitudes, you know, telling him that time heals all wounds, all you need is Jesus. That's not encouraging. That's just kind of annoying. It's not telling him that his divorce is a good thing or minimizing the divorce. Encouraging is speaking courage into him.
Mm.
It's reminding him that even if God seems distant or absent, God is not. He is right there. God is supporting him and loving him, and God will get him through this difficult time. It's not minimizing the difficulty. It's encouraging him that we serve a faithful God, and God will get him through this challenging time, because he's suffering and nobody likes to suffer. We all want the suffering to end. God will be with him every step of the way.
And by the way, just, I think something we talked about before, as you're encouraging him, I think, remember that we talked about the fact that he's dealing with trauma. He's probably not acting like himself. He's not at full capacity.
Right.
Maybe it's the encouragement is reminding him of who you know him to be.
Right.
The truth of who he is, the truth that he is a good man, you know, that he is a beloved child of God, or the things that you've known or seen in him potentially before. I think it could be good to remind him of who he is.
And I think that's a great point. And the best source for this, obviously, is the Bible. So find some passages. Again, not the patronizing, you know, bumper sticker type things, but get into the Psalms. I have as an example, Psalm 37. David in Psalm 37 states from experience that God's followers, even his closest followers, sometimes fall. The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. There's plenty of passages you can find that talk about the strength that God provides, reconciliation, forgiveness, restoration, healing. Yeah. These are all things that should speak to his heart. You know, don't inundate him with, you know, hey, here's 50 passages you might like. You've had a conversation with him. You're kind of getting a feel for where he is. Do some homework, do some digging into your Bible, and then offer him some encouragement through scripture.
That's great.
The other way you can encourage him, and again, this requires your faithfulness, is praying for him, offering specific prayers, praying for him right then. You know, a lot of times we say, oh, hey, I'll pray for you. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm guilty of, oh, what was I supposed to pray for? You know, if I don't do it right then, I may forget. So pray for him right then. Put the requests on your phone and vow to pray for him regularly and then follow up. Often God steps in and answers our prayers, and I don't even follow up on, you know, hey, we prayed about this. How's it going? And, you know, oh gosh, God solved that for you. You know, why am I surprised? But I always am. So pray and follow up. He needs your prayers. He needs your support. And that's an active way that you can demonstrate that you care for him. It's a way of turning things over to God with the assurance that God will respond.
Yep. Forgive me, but was pray for him number seven?
Seven. Yeah.
Pray for
him and follow up. Right.
And follow up. Okay, great. And I was going to just add to that real quick, just in case, because sometimes I know some people have trouble knowing what to pray, or when you're with that person, it can be intimidating, actually, feeling like, I'm going to pray for you now. Ooh, what am I going to say?
Right.
Here's just from a pastor's perspective, let me just give you this hopefully will something to hang your hat on. Typically in those situations, I really focus on God and his character. Not even necessarily the person I'm praying for. Not that I still say things about that person and I bring that person before God, but what I find most edifying in those situations is praying to God and almost rehearsing or reciting God's faithfulness, his goodness, you know? So God, thank you so much that we can trust you. Thank you, Father, that you are the safe place. God, be that safe place for Jimmy. God, I pray that he would find comfort in you. We know that you comfort us in all ways, Lord. And we see what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Focus on God's character, who yep. he is, because ultimately that is where your friend is going to find their provision, is in yep. God, not in you, and right. not in necessarily what you say. It can be through you, but it's ultimately God.
Right. Great insight, Mike. Let's go through one more time. We have two to go. So reach out, be available, be flexible. Let him take the wheel, especially early on. Grieve with him. Be trustworthy and steady. Be encouraging. Pray and follow up on your prayers. Last two, be alert. You may not have known him that well at the outset, but you've had some interactions with him, some close interactions. Be on the lookout for him not making progress, for any warning signs that he is really spiraling down.
Yeah.
I mentioned suicidal language earlier on. It doesn't always manifest itself as that kind of language, but your friend is likely to be going through depression. Maybe it's not clinical depression, but he's dealing with, as you said, you know, a lot of really heavy things. He's not himself. He should be making some positive progress if you've met with him over the course of a couple of months. If he's not, if he seems to be going in the opposite direction, then this is the time where you do try to bring some other people into the picture, point him to a Christian counselor, encourage him to talk to the pastor or a pastor at the church. Even if he's left the church, you know, the yeah. pastor would love to talk to him. Pastor's not going to be condemning or fault finding. The pastor cares about him and wants him to get on better footing than he yeah. seems to be on right now. And that leads into the last one, which is to lead others to support him. Whether or not he's moving toward more isolation, you don't want to be the only one who is supporting your friend. You can be a leader here. You can go to others, maybe at your church, other Christian men you know, and without revealing any of the details that you kept confidential, you can say, "Hey, Jimmy needs some support. He's probably going to be a little reluctant to come to an event at church or elsewhere just because,
yeah,
you know, he's interacted with you but doesn't want to expose himself to 10, 20, 30 guys."
Right.
But you can begin to rally other guys in support of this Christian brother who you've been working with for a couple of months now. You want to connect Jimmy with God, and you also want him to get into a church home. It'll help him stop isolating. Maybe it's ultimately not your church for his church home, but men are open to ministering to other men who may not feel comfortable coming to a Sunday worship service. So look for opportunities to connect him to men in the church and men's activities associated with the church at some point, maybe not initially, yep. but I think you yep. can see this as kind of expanding circles where first it's you, then it's a couple of men in your circle, and then it's a broader group of men because he needs to get connected to Christian men.
Which is a great place to plug CLC because right. I've seen over and over again how a guy who's been through a traumatic experience like that relationally or in their marriage get plugged into a CLC group and suddenly they've got a team. You know what I mean? They've got men who are on their side or for them. And man, is that life-giving. I've watched it absolutely. Because the men that I've known, the vast majority of them who've been through a divorce, they are desperate for that. They really want it. They're thirsty for it.
You've got a community of brothers. You've got full confidentiality. And what you'll find is that other men have been through, maybe not a divorce, but they've been through experiences that were traumatizing like yours has been. And, you know, they feel like they've fallen short and they found forgiveness and restoration with Jesus.
Our discussion of how you can help a Christian brother who is going through or has gone through a divorce refers to an article that I wrote for Salem's online publication, crosswalk.com. The article is entitled, 9 Ways Men Can Support Christian Brothers Through Divorce. There's a link to it in the show notes. If you'd like links to other articles I've written on divorce, or if you want to discuss your own situation, then reach out to me on the throwingmountains.com contact page. I'll keep everything confidential. Thanks for listening to the Throwing Mountains podcast.